All right, so what happened? Well, at the trial court, in the Endeavor case, the trial court said, no, the acreage outside the file preparation units was not retained, and Endeavor's lease is partially terminated. The trial court in the XOG case said, the acreage outside the file preparation units was retained, and the term assignment did not terminate. The Eastland Court of Appeals affirmed the Endeavor case. The Amarillo Court of Appeals affirms the XOG opinion. And then the Texas Supreme Court initially denied the petitions for review, granted the motions for rehearing, and then affirmed both the cases. How'd that happen? I'm still scratching my head on that one, right? Why were there different results? I mean, we had the same fact pattern. We had substantially the same termination language. If you look, remember the lease said it terminates as to all lands and depths except those that are located within a preparation unit. The term assignment in the XOG case said it's going to terminate as to all the lands and depths, save and except the portion of the lease included within a preparation unit or a pooled unit. Well, there were some differences. They had different words that used to describe the preparation units in the conveyancing documents, right? So what the Texas Supreme Court really seized on were the difference between the words assigned and established or prescribed by field rules. And then there's some differences in the field rules as well. The STA field rules used the word assigned for establishing preparation units. The Allison Britfield rules said 320 acres were the prescribed preparation unit. So in the XOG case, when the court said, here's why these cases are different, this is what they told, what the Supreme Court told us. The term assignment equates the acreage included within a preparation unit with that prescribed by the field rules. The Allison Britfield rules expressly prescribe the same word, 320 acres. The field rules in Endeavor referred to assignments by operators claiming acreage. The field rules in this case also refer to assigned acreage, but unlike the field rules in Endeavor, they also prescribe preparation units. In Endeavor, neither the retained acreage provision nor the field rules refer to a prescribed preparation unit. There's only one problem with that analysis. It makes it sound like, okay, because the field rules in the XOG case said 320 acres are the prescribed preparation units, it makes it sound like as soon as they drilled a well, boom, a preparation unit existed. But as a practical matter, that's not how that happens. And I've asked some very fine regulatory scholars this question. And my understanding is there is no such thing as a preparation unit anywhere until an operator files its completion papers, the commission actually approves those filings, and actually schedules the well on a preparation schedule. Nevertheless, now in the Endeavor case, the court gave us a little bit more guidance too. Retained acreage clauses come in many different shapes, sizes, and forms. The effect of a particular clause depends on the terms the parties freely chose, and like the commission's implementation of special field rules, there's no one-size-fits-all result of their proper construction. Each retained acreage clause must be construed on its own under governing provisions of contract interpretation. So from the two cases that came out on the same day, there are several guidelines for interpretation that I was able to glean. First off, these are all snowflakes. Everyone is different. And every factual situation is going to be different. General rules of contract construction apply. That means we get to argue four corners, plain language, harmonization, render words meaningless, all those arguments. Parties are free to contract in any way they want, not prohibited by law. These retained acreage clauses, when they reach out and grab regulatory constructs like preparation units, they incorporate and make themselves subject to the state's regulatory police power to conserve and develop. They're going to be construed from a utilitarian point of view, bearing in mind the particular business activity sought to be served. Unreasonable constructions are not favored and to be avoided. These will be ambiguous if there is more than one reasonable interpretation. And the last one, and I think is super important, special limitations. To cause a termination, that language has got to be so clear, precise, and unequivocal that it can reasonably given no other meaning. All right. So, since that decision, the day those two cases came out in 2018, there have been 5 retained acreage cases that the Supreme Court has requested briefing on the merits. The first two, the Supreme Court denied the petitions for review after asking for full briefing on the merits. The second two, they gave us opinions. And the last one is the MRC case that's pending currently before the Supreme Court. I'm going to try to get through as much of those as I possibly can in the time I have left. Okay. Apache Deepwater, that was a case that really involves the difference between whether or not the retained acreage clause provided for rolling termination or a snapshot at the end of the primary term. This is the language from that particular retained acreage clause. At the end of the primary term, everything terminates except, you know, what's in the paration unit, or 160 acres. The facts are, at the end of the primary term, there was a well on every quarter section of that section. They were producing. 15, 20 years down the line, all the wells had stopped producing except one. And so the lessors made a new lease with Double Eagle covering 3 of those paration units. So what's rolling termination?